welcome to Change Surfer Radio. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of our radically democratic future.
I'm speaking with Justin Talbot Stern. He's a graduate student on leave currently in San Diego, has a background in aeronautic engineering or space sciences. He'll tell us more about that. A native of both the United States and Australia, and co-founder of Think Mars, which is a group of MIT and Harvard students who are planning a public-private strategy to get humans to Mars. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you.
Now, tell us a little bit more about your background. How did you get involved in space work?
Well, I have always been interested in planes and spacecraft. I've done several degrees in aeronautical engineering, and I did those in Australia. I moved back to the United States, where I originally grew up, and went to MIT to start a PhD in aeronautics and astronautics. For those MIT alums, I guess course 16. Before I got to MIT, I had the opportunity for 6 months to work in the Human Mars Mission Planning Office at the NASA Johnson Space Center, where I was the lead engineer for Human Mars rovers and worked a lot in the public outreach side of things. So I saw what type of information people needed to get excited about Mars. And that was a real eye-opener. I got to meet a lot of the key engineers there, met people like Bob Zubrin at the Mars Society, and see from a technical point of view how the missions get built. Once I moved to MIT, though, and sort of got the entrepreneurial bug, I started to meet up with a lot of people that were interested in more the business side, how to pay for things, how to manage it, how to organize it. And I guess that was just good timing, because the people I worked with at NASA, some of the managers, launched a competition in September 1998, which was called the 1999 NASA Means Business Competition. The purpose being to have university students from engineering and business backgrounds to try to come up with business plans to enable human Mars exploration. Our MIT team, we entered a submission. We were a semifinalist in that competition. We then went to Houston, and we came up with our business plan. We did some public outreach. We went to Houston and presented it to the engineers and the managers there, and we were selected as a finalist in that competition. But being MIT and Harvard students, we didn't just stop there. We have also been to Washington, D.C., to brief Congress on our plan and other members of NASA at headquarters and some of the science foundations like NSF, also the FAA and the Department of Commerce. Then we went to the Mars Society conference in Boulder, Colorado this year in August to share our ideas with all the great people at the Mars Society and the engineers and the citizens and people from around the country that joined that. And then in October, early October at MIT, we held our Keystone event, Mars Week, where we brought people in like astronaut Buzz Aldrin, Franklin Chang Diaz, eminent scientists and engineers like Dr. Everett Gibson from NASA Johnson Space Center, Chris McKay and Pascal Lee from Ames, who are involved in life on Mars and setting up the Mars Arctic base in Canada. And we presented our business plan concept to several hundred people there along with all these other speakers. But what is the business plan concept? Well, about 100 of us, we range from 50 to 100 at any given time over the last year, both business school students from Sloan and Harvard Business School and engineering students from aeronautics, electrical, and computer science, worked on developing a business concept that would make sending humans to Mars feasible from a logistical, operational, management, and financial point of view. We went through over 60 case studies looking at things like the International Space Station, Arianespace, the Space Shuttle, NASA, other government space organizations. We looked at other industries like media and sponsorships and the auto industry and satellites and so on to get a feel for what would be the best way to run an organization like this. Would it be profit or nonprofit? Would it be international or national? Would it be fully government, fully industry, or a partnership between the two? what is the, and after coming up with all that, we looked at what would be the best organizational structure to be able to manage that most efficiently. And most importantly, instead of setting, instead of coming up with certain products that could be sold, for example, we looked at first what were the markets. Most importantly, when you set up a business, what market are you trying to satisfy? Which you will find by evaluating existing companies, generally what happens is that a technology or a product is developed, and then the marketing department goes and tries to figure out where they could sell that. That, over time, you find is relatively unsuccessful. So what we did was looking at, well, what type of markets could we satisfy, or what markets could be satisfied by a Mars mission, and hence what products would be needed to satisfy that. Our core principle was semi-commercialization, a partnership between government and the private industry. We have concepts like selling commercial seats on missions. Think Mars would be, if Think Mars is both the student organization that we run and also our the name of our business company concept. Think Mars would sell seats on the missions. It would be the integrator of the entire mission. It would do all the management, finance, and marketing tasks or control those tasks, but would contract out things like operations, engineering, design to those companies or organizations which are best able to do it, like Boeing, Lockheed Martin, and NASA. The result is that Think Mars can operate efficiently. It acts as a conduit for management and financial aspects of the mission, and can then put that money out where it needs to be spent on contracting out for the building of the pieces and the operating of those pieces. So, as I said, we would sell seats. We would seek sponsorships. We would seek media rights for this. The question we always ask is how much would 3 billion pairs of eyeballs be worth watching the first landing on Mars? We would aggressively pursue technology transfer from the Mars mission into normal public life, things like the CAT scan, Velcro, and all the and many things that we use in everyday life are derivatives of the Apollo program and the shuttle program. And there's no reason to see why technologies developed for Mars exploration won't also be transferred into normal life. Let me see. Can I just take a break there?
Sure. Yeah. for those who are just joining us, I'm talking to Justin Talbert Stern. He's co-founder of Think Mars, which is, as he's been describing, is an ambitious, currently student-led, but eventually you're going to be taking this actually into the marketplace. Are you going to be selling shares in Think Mars?
We really don't know in terms of the ownership structure. What we envisage is initially some initial government help. I'm not exactly sure how to phrase that correctly. It would probably be in the form of zero coupon bonds, or maybe what you might call a Mars bond, supporting the mission. Basically, the government would help assume a lot of the risk. And then large companies, both in the aerospace industry and out, and also investors, small and large, would then be able to take up equity stakes or bond stakes in the company. The result is that we could then raise, by using the government as a risk minimization vehicle, the whole mission could raise enough money to fund its ongoing process. Now, you may ask, how much is the whole mission? And there are wide-ranging quotes from $30 billion or as low as $10 billion, some people up into the hundreds of billions of dollars. But if we can start to commercialize some of these aspects of the mission, for example, let's assume a $50 billion price tag. If NASA or if the U.S. government was to allow a semi-commercial entity to operate this type of mission, an entity that can go out and seek media right funding and sponsorships and do technology transfer, what we found in our case studies is that an organization like Think Mars might be able to raise perhaps half or more of the money to fund the mission to reduce the cost to the government. So instead of the government spending $50 billion through NASA to get humans to Mars, or with the U.S. government and Russia and Japan and Europe, you might find that those governments need to spend $25 billion or less. That's still a lot of money. But then if we also assume that it takes maybe a decade or two to get the program ready and to make it all happen, then you're really only talking about $2 or $3 billion a year. Again, that is still a lot of money, but that is actually the same magnitude as what is spent on the shuttle and the space station programs this each year. And as you will imagine, a human Mars mission, I would hope, would generate far more public interest and excitement than simply shuttle missions or space station missions.
Now, does your plan, your business proposal, envision the actual colonization of Mars? Are you trying to sell seats in an actual colony or just a trip to Mars for scientific and recreational and commercial exploitation?
Well, as a Mars enthusiast, I would like to say that we are colonization as an endpoint. However, when you're talking about business plans and you're talking about investors' money, colonization, land rights, and things like manifest destiny aren't worth much money. Our aim in Think Mars was to come up with a quantitative, not qualitative, but a quantitative business plan that really tries to get to the nuts and bolts of trading off the risk versus the reward and being able to put real numbers on that, billions here, billions there, and trying to come up with something conclusive. However, of course, the most valuable thing that may come from Mars exploration will be the colonization of another planet, something we haven't done yet. We've done other new worlds, as in other continents, but we have not done new planets. I can throw out any number of statistics that Mars has the same surface area as the Earth in terms of land, and so hypothetically, you could ask the question, could it support another 6 billion people? Mars has all the same materials and minerals and elements as Earth in approximately the same abundances. I'm not a planetology scientist, but in all the talks I've been to, that's what I've heard over and over again. And so that Mars is a very possible place. However, that's very, very difficult to sell to an investor who just made 200% on America Online. And so what we're trying to do is quantify human exploration such that space into the next internet boom in terms of investment, in terms of opportunity, in terms of technology.
Now, it intrigues me that your plan is both public and private, because there's been a tremendous upsurge in a political organization of the pro-Mars lobby since the founding of the Mars Society 2 years ago. And Robert Zubrin, who's the current president of that, his book, The Case for Mars, also makes a public-private, or at least he's agnostic on the question of public-private. But it seems like a lot of the people who are involved in the Mars movement are libertarians, both ideologically and commercially committed to a commercial path to Mars and exploring that and not very interested in the public end of it. Would you say that that's a fair characterization?
I would say that's pretty fair. My personal opinion is that is somewhat, I'm not going to say wrong, but it's an unrealistic point of view. If you assume that industry will do it, my question is, where are you going to get all the money? There's a slew of small rocket companies trying to get into low Earth orbit, and so far they have been unsuccessful. I hope that someone will eventually make it work and make it work profitably and successfully. But the question is, if you're having trouble getting into low Earth orbit, whatever makes you think that you'll put a human on Mars when that's going to cost you in the least $10 billion, $20, $30 billion? That's a lot of money. Then someone might look at, well, what about big aerospace companies? Well, I would speculate that the big aerospace companies like Lockheed Martin and Boeing are even more risk-averse than the government and then NASA, and that makes the whole problem even more difficult. We have talked with executives from these companies, and it's an even harder sell to them than it is to people like Congressman Sensenbrenner or Senator Bro from Louisiana. The people on Congress love this type of idea, one, because it reduces the cost to them, but two, they still see the American government as being involved for the sake of the American public. Now, I think Bob Zubrin, he's a fantastic person in terms of the press he's been able to, garner on Mars. His ideas are great. And I think I would speculate that his current position is that the most likely way we'll get to Mars is through a presidential mandate. I believe that's his current thinking. My current thinking is similar. It just, in terms of reality, I'm the type of person who likes to go beyond the go out of the box, but go out of the box to the next box, which is relatively close by. That one is Mars. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about putting people on stars far away or going to other stars, because that's so far away. That's a dreamer type of thing. I like to take what is close and make it very tangible. And I think Bob Zubrin's very similar in that. But also, what is an important point is Mars is merely a stepping stone for us. It's the first step.
You say you're not interested in colonizing stars. I'm sure you're a little bit interested in it, but
it's a little unrealistic, though, at this stage for that to happen in my lifetime.
Right.
I see myself and my skills and my talent as being best used to get humanity to Mars, and those who follow on can then get us to the other moons of Jupiter and Saturn, and then on to other stars.
There is a tangible connection between all space exploration, and in that propulsion is the key here. If the potential advances in propulsion may make it a lot more commercially feasible to do Mars and to do everything else.
Right.
And so I'm sure you're following very closely NASA's research into breakthrough propulsion methods and new propulsion.
Sure, and that is why we had Dr. Franklin Chang Diaz, who's an MIT alum, come back to our Mars Week event. Because he is in charge of the Vazimer project, which basically is a plasma fusion rocket. And one thing, I've seen this rocket up close. I haven't seen it operating, but, you know, it's been around. He's been working on this project for basically the last 20 years, ever since he was selected as an astronaut and before. And what really got me was during his presentation, he showed some pictures of it in operation. And I think that really stunned the crowd, neat little pictures in a kid's book anymore. These are real things. There's real metal in a lab down in NASA in Texas, and there's this engine that is spewing forth plasma in controlled bursts, in controlled contours that is creating thrust. And I think that amazed the entire crowd. Nobody had ever seen those pictures before.
Another part of the space, the Mars movement, is Kim Stanley Robinson, who I'm sure has inspired a lot of support for Mars exploration with his books Blue, Green, and Red Mars. And Kim represents another strain, which is that Mars and space exploration in general may be an opportunity for political experiments, which we currently are too constrained to do on Earth. You know, there are very few progressives who have been involved in this stuff.
That's a very exciting possibility,
yeah.
I think. When I was little, I hated doing history. I'm an engineer. I'm a scientist. I have some business interests, but boy, did I hate taking American history. But now I gobble it up. I love the concepts of politics and dealing with the institutions that evolve and trying to come up with, for example, the most democratic institution. And I'm really excited by the presidential process that's going on now. I think for the first time in many years, we've got a reasonably close race on both sides. And it was really exciting to watch, especially at the Republican New Hampshire debate, that these politicians maneuvering, trying to use the Constitution and go back to the roots. And you know, everyone sort of, all of a sudden you think, well, wait a second, you could have an entire experiment all over again on another planet, the opportunity to create not only a new world, but a new way of living, a new way of community. And I think that's for someone like me, that has enormous possibility. I mean, also with my Australian, partial Australian heritage, Australia just had a constitutional convention and an election in terms of what it would like to be. And so, you know, this does happen around the world, but it sure happens a lot less than it used to, because everything, you know, is relatively stable. But the opportunity to go and create new government, to create new communities and ways of life and ways and methods of interaction is a very intriguing prospect. I think most people discount it as these days as unnecessary and a waste of time. But after all, that's why we're all here.
Yeah, I think that the Mars mission, a Mars project, would give a focus to human endeavors and bring us together in ways that we hadn't seen before as well. So it'd be both a benefit to those who want to do political experiments there and to the politics of Earth as well.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be, in addition, I think it would be foolish to assume that whoever goes would forever be a derivative of Earth in terms of political process and coming. You could not expect some Americans to go and after 100 years, probably remain America. It would be probably their own country. Or their own planet.
Well, I've been speaking with Justin Talbot Stern. He's the co-founder of Think Mars and currently on leave working on the internet economy, which is, of course, key to all this as well, out in San Diego. And I wish you the best with your project.
Thank you.
People can find out more about it at www.thinkmars.com.
.net.
Thinkmars.net.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS-FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. Also, check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website, www.changesurfer.com.